This is CliffCentral.com.
Kanda kulu we mlomo mkulu subu ya iti nge election ubu sichaya nge selection.
All right, so welcome to the Gilmore Tea Vibe, and this afternoon I'm joined by Owen Masego. He's a renowned Zimbabwean artist who's known for expressing himself through music and through his visual art. And also, you do a lot of pottery stuff, yeah?
Yeah, I do.
You do everything.
Yeah. Like, I'm one of those very experimental visual artists, who kind of tries literally everything. So, yeah, I think it's really quite inspiring to be able to learn new things every time.
Yeah, but I think basically in life, if you stop learning, then there's no point for you living. Every single day.
Yeah, you have to learn each and everything, and also be able to be flexible and take up different challenges as an artist, because art is very, very wide. Like, it's not static where you need to be drawing only. You can do anything else in art.
So if you're just joining us, so make sure you tell everybody else that Owen Masego, who's an outstanding Zimbabwean artist, is joining me here on the Gilmore Tea Vibe on Cliff Central. So you can also live stream on www.cliffcentral.com, and also hashtag the show at GTEEVibe. And also make sure that you engage with us on Twitter. Our handle as Cliff Central is at cliffcentral.com, and also mine is Gilmore TEE. We're going to be having a conversation with Owen Masego. You were talking about elections, and I've known you for almost about how many years now?
I think more than 15 years or more.
It's more than a decade, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
But then the first thing that struck me the most is when you had an exhibition in 2010 in March.
Yeah.
I clearly remember that because I was going for a British Council conference, and then we came to your exhibition.
I remember you were
there. Went to Harare, and then the moment we landed in Harare, we hear that Owen Masego has been arrested, and they are looking for everyone else who attended the exhibition. So imagine, I'm a young man and I'm thinking, oh shit, I attended this exhibition, what's going to happen to me? Take me through that whole process for you. What was so important for you to be able to have that exhibition? Because I think that's one of the very exhibitions that put you out there as an individual.
I think I had a brush with the law earlier about my paintings. I think it was in 2003. I was asked to take my painting down because
2003.
It was in 2003. Wow. So I put it in the craft fair, in the craft shop at the gallery. So it was just one big painting, but it wasn't that big though. But the title for that painting was called "One Man at a Time." So it was these figures that were trying to use the toilet seat at the same time. I think there were about four or five figures.
Okay.
So it was one full at a time. So it was kind of highly political. So I remember the lady who works at the gallery shop just asked me to take my painting down because I had a few guys that came through and asked about this painting and the artist. I think then, as an artist, it didn't really... I mean, I didn't really take it seriously or anything. I think I respected the lady who worked at the gallery more. I was polite and I had to take it down. And then in 2005, I did Toilet Democracy, where I portrayed the toilet as a space where you kind of... people are able to scribble onto the walls and use all sorts of...
people use shit to scribble on the
wall. So it was that idea. And also, if you follow through in any public spaces and even in schools, you see some responses and some reactions, people actually chatting, but they wouldn't know who wrote what and so on.
Exactly.
Found that quite interesting to bring it into the gallery because it kind of became this toilet democracy where people are able to express themselves
in the toilet.
So because as you walk in and out, you are able to respond. There could be racial connotations, be political, there could be religious and all sorts of things and personal stuff. So that to me, it was kind of one of those interesting things to see in public spaces. Then the other exhibition that I also did was an installation which was called the barbershop.
Yeah.
So the barbershop, it was this figure, I think it was in 2009. Soon after the 2008 violence election, so it was called the barbershop.
But you kept doing these things in a space where Zimbabwe, because you know, when you talk about freedom of expression, Zimbabwe is really not at that level where we can say we are free to express ourselves. And I can only imagine 2003, 2005, 2008 was even worse, because people were getting killed for expressing themselves or for marching against some sort of policies and governance. And then here you are, you keep doing these things.
I think what I've been doing over the past few years is that I've been this artist that has always been sensitive about my environment. So I would react, or I would actually comment through my art, my paintings and installations. Then it happened that in 2010, I did an exhibition about Kukurundi atrocities that were committed by the current government. I say the current government because it's still the Mugabe regime.
But they say it's a new dispensation.
I mean, they say that, but nothing much has changed. You know, it's still the very same thing. So these atrocities were actually targeted. It was tribally, you know, it was against a particular tribe. In this case, it was the Ndebele people. So the government unleashed a North Korean trained brigade that actually came through to down to Matepeleland and literally killed more than 20,000. It's actually estimated it's actually 40,000 people that were killed during that time. So the whole reason was that Mugabe then was wanting to get rid of the dissidents after the liberation struggle. But it happened that it was targeting the Ndebele people. So all in the end, it was about to establish a one-party state, which they actually, the ZANU-PF and Mugabe actually achieved. Because it was crushing the ZIPRA and the Joshua Nkomo-led ZAPU party. So that's exactly what happened. That happened between 1983 and 1987. So what is interesting about that is that during those years, I was very small. Like I was a small young man who grew up in Entumbane. I think I was about in 19.
You were actually in Entumbane, where
everything was happening. And actually, I actually learned even most recently that a lot of people were actually killed in Entumbane because it was an army base. We literally lived with the army when we were small. So my parents had a house there, and they still do. So it was back, I think we got there in 1981. So that happened between 1983 and 1987. I remember very well when I was young, witnessing my parents, my neighbors being beaten up and being really severely, brutally, I mean, injured in that process. And I'm sure most of the people also died as well. So I witnessed all those kind of things. And I also remember when we were growing up in that army camp, army base in Entumbane. Our parents, you would actually, you know, always tell us never to pick up any object that you are not sure of, or to pick up things because you could pick up grenades
and
you know, sometimes, you know, in our African culture, literally everyone has got their little gardens that you grow your little vegetables and all that. So at some point, when cultivating those little ones, you could exhume or find a grenade. The army will be called. Then they would detonate, and then go watch when it's being exploded. Can you imagine all these things, picking up bullets and all these things when we were small? So we're exposed to all these happenings that were not really good for young children. But we had no choice. It was the environment that we were living in.
But you know, a lot of people say that a lot of people that are talking about Kukurundi at the moment, most of them have never experienced it. So would you say that you're experiencing it when you're pretty much young, just sort of like inspired you to do more of what you're doing now in your work, but at the same time someone would come and say but yet you saw this. You're talking about how when you were a kid you pick a, your parents, you would see things happening to your parents and your next door neighbors, and for you so it became some sort of inspiration to express that
for quite a long time. I didn't really realize how much I had captured for the past.
Kids capture a lot of stuff.
Capture quite a lot of stuff. And also these memories, like, they were so clear. So when I started, as I was growing up, because sometimes all these things wakusenzakala ubona, but you could not understand why things were happening the way they were happening. Why is my father saying to me, don't get married to a Shona person? Why my mother is saying, don't play with Shona friends? So, but as a child, you are this innocent little soul, and you are having all these friends. And actually, my best friend was Shona. When I was growing up, he's called Nathan Marimo, and many other guys that I went to school with. So it didn't mean anything really up until we started asking questions, our generation. That's when my father would quieten me, and my mother would say, keep quiet about this, we're not supposed to talk about this, Kukura only. It's problematic.
But then how do we even heal if you're not able to talk about something? Because obviously if something happens to you, or if something has happened to the people, they are meant to talk about it, to sort of like move on.
Because the idea of healing, or where we start off to heal, is only when we are able to let out. When you are able to share and talk about your experiences or whatever you saw. In my case, when I was very young, for my parents, they need to talk about those things. As you know, well know, in my culture, a lot of people were disappeared during that time, rumored to have been buried in mass graves. Some people even imagine that people fled and went outside the country, but they never came back even up to today. So all that needs to be resolved. People need to be buried properly. As you know, our culture, we need to communicate with our dead and our ancestors. So in a way, if that doesn't happen, unfortunately, I'll crudely put it this way, it's a time bomb. That will one day explode into this society and will have more problems, especially in the near future, or the young people that are growing today.
Yeah, because it's been swept out under the carpet, so it becomes, it's constantly there. And it's going to trigger more things because no one is dealing with the issues of what happened during Kukuraundi and the people that were affected. But when you are now, as an artist, expressing yourself, because I think the beauty about art is being able to express yourself without really speaking. You just are able to express yourself through the music or through your painting. But then if we're cutting this expression amongst artists or individuals, then how are we able to express all these things that happened to us?
I think the whole censorship act that is enshrined in the Zimbabwean constitution in a way is supposed to suppress people. But I think what happened with me was quite one of those problematic things for the government, because if you look at our society at the moment, art is not really taken seriously. So in a way, I was able to present this exhibition before I got arrested, because art is for the elite, and art is for people that actually go to art spaces like galleries that appreciate art. So where I come from, not many people really understand art is for those very poor people who have nothing to do and all that. So in a way, that gave me an advantage to be able to put up the exhibition at the gallery. And the director, who is still the director even up to today, in 47, is a great artist. So he had this artistic approach to my exhibition, as much as he understood the context of my exhibition. But he accepted the exhibition as an art piece, not as a political statement. I think that's why he was able to let me do the exhibition.
I think it's something that you should do anyway. Because that's space where you express yourselves.
Gallery is for art, so I think it's the best space. It's the only space actually for art that, you know, artists have to function. So in 2010, I did this exhibition. It was like a normal opening night, which was on the 25th of March. And then
for me, I thought it was such a freaky exhibition, because I remember walking in and was seeing these things hanging. It sort of like brings some sort of emotion. You now get an understanding of some sort, even if it didn't exist during that time.
I think what I did was I used the paintings. They've got this fierce red color.
Yes.
And I sketched using a black paint, acrylic paint, and I used red acrylic paint against a white background canvas.
Mm.
And I painted for the first time the gallery wall, which has never been done, red as well.
Yeah.
And I put these very fierce figures as well that, you know, were very sad, and they were black and they were dripping with blood, and they were all kind of put upside down, hanging upside down.
Yeah.
And if you look at the Bulawayo National Gallery on the other side or where the pavement is,
yes,
there are huge windows.
Yes.
So the public kind of could see those hanging figures,
yeah,
which were hanging upside down. I think for the first time, the people that were walking on the pavement could actually stare and look and stop at the gallery window, because it was quite one of those eye-catching moments where people really... No one would expect a human being, because I did life-size installations of figures hanging upside down, which was a way of torture, because the soldiers then, the Gugurahundi, would come through to the village and hang people upside down and maybe ask the students or some of the teachers to beat that person to death using sticks and whatever they could give them or they could pick until that person dies, or they could hang the person upside down until that person dies or whatever happens to the person, and then they would bury them in mass graves. So the exhibition itself, if you look at the title as well, Sibatondisele means let's trip on them. So Sibatondisele in this case, or let's trip on them, it was a way of torture the army used to its victims or against its victims to use dripping hot plastic on people's bodies and burn people. I know that there are a few individuals that in Entumbane had those kind of wounds, that the survivors and all that. So it was really one of those really painful torture. So that was the title of my exhibition. So my approach basically was about to bring out this strong message in terms of drawings that were not complicated.
Yeah.
And drawings that could easily be interpreted by a simple person. You didn't need to be a great art critic or art lover to understand my drawings. And also, like, I also used some for graffiti, I used some newspaper
comments
that were said by the ministers and the influential people, including Robert Mugabe and the current Zimbabwean president Emmerson Mnangagwa. And one of the things he actually said was that he even said we are cockroaches, we need to be given DDT for us to be killed. So he said that. And can you imagine Zimbabwe at the present moment? We've got a president who's got blood on his hands.
So how do you feel? I mean, now that you have touched upon the president, maybe we'll go back to the topic. Everyone keeps saying we're in a new dispensation in Zimbabwe at the moment, and we've got Emmerson Mnangagwa, who just took over from Robert Mugabe in a coup, not coup, whatever people want to call it. But then how do you feel about this new dispensation that we seem to be living in? Is it actually a new dispensation, or is just continuous?
I think as far as I'm concerned, it's just a continuous Mnangagwa is literally continuing the legacy of Mugabe. I think a lot of people got a bit confused, or rather clouded, by the fact that in a way Mnangagwa last year, was it the 17th of November, when he ousted Mugabe out of power,
yes,
he kind of became this hero
for the
because people. It was some kind of a relief for individuals, because Mugabe was this representation of oppression and ZANU-PF and power and control and dictatorship. So here suddenly what us as Zimbabweans have been longing for is learning to get rid of or to end this kind of leadership is now gone. So we kind of, or most people kind of rejoiced. But in a way, we knew that this was going to be short-lived, because there was no way Mnangagwa was going to oust Mugabe out of power to give power to opposition
parties.
There was no way that could happen. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, when we went for the elections, so we all strongly believed that there is this democratic environment mm-hmm. where everyone mm-hmm. has free and fair elections. Mm-hmm. But everything was well-crafted, well-planned.
It was planned, huh?
And kind of deceived everyone. If you look at what is happening now in Zimbabwe, soon after elections, things are getting worse. We're going back to 2008, where things, prices are shooting up. There's no fuel. Some shops are getting a bit empty right now. And it's very difficult to live or survive. So it's kind of this thing where Mugabe legacy is still continuing.
It's going on.
Yeah.
So last year in November, were you part of the people that went to march? You know, when we asked, the whole nation was asked to march. Were you part of those people that marched just before
I wouldn't say I marched or I rejoiced. But it was a spectacular moment and time to be in a situation where people were celebrating. Because I remember my wife and I, we went into town when we heard through social media that Mugabe has stepped down. So we kind of went into town. I think we went into town for about 3 or 4 hours. So when people were celebrating and doing all sorts of things. But coming from the background of being arrested and my court case going on for 5 years, it was really, I was in a different state of mind, because what I was seeing, I knew it was not something that could last. I had that consciousness. Because to me, my exhibition was banned, and it's still banned today.
Even after the new dispensation, it's still banned.
Dispensation. And you remember as well that a lot of efforts about these atrocities has actually failed twice.
Yes.
About to talk about Kukurawunda. It's only most recently, like sometime last week in Intwasa Festival, where Zenzele was able to present his Kukurawundi
documentary.
Documentary and a play. Which also was about Kukurawunda, called 1983, The Dark Years. I think it was written by Pegu Musa. So that that has happened, but still it hasn't given us any hope that the government is actually ready to talk about.
Yeah, because I feel the government is not yet ready to
It's not
yet.
Even the NPRC, the National Truth and Reconciliation Commission, came through to watch the documentary, but they are coming to the documentary, it does not solve.
No, it doesn't.
It's not a guarantee, or it's just, they could easily have attended anything they wanted. They chose the documentary.
Exactly.
To me, I mean, I attended, they also attended, so what difference does it make? We wanted them to be actually people that are able to action something towards that direction.
Maybe the first thing is to facilitate an open conversation where people are able to fully express themselves. Maybe that would work. I know, like last year, there was something like that happened at the Rainbow Hotel, where there was Dabengwa and Sipho Malunga and everyone else.
But unfortunately, in that conversation, you know, there were government elements or individual elements that clearly were sent from the government to disrupt the meetings, which they succeeded both in Harare and in Mbulawayo. So clearly you could tell that what was happening during Mugabe era is still happening in Mnangagwa's era. So nothing has changed.
It's the same.
So we still have a long way to go. And also, for as long as people are being arrested, and if you ask Zenzele today about his documentary, he said that he had to actually go to South Africa so that he can actually come back on the very same day when he was presenting his documentary, so that he wasn't going to go through all these problematic processes of getting clearance and all that. Obviously, clearances are made to make sure that you don't do anything. So it wasn't going to be presented. So he came up with a great strategy, and
he went away
and
came back.
Yeah,
so you would say possibly we're still very far in terms of freedom of expression, because when you talk about freedom of expression, and when your name comes up, there's names like Thomas Mafumo that rocks in also, Owen Masego, you are all now on the same level. I mean, not maybe you've got locks, but you are just people that are known for being able to try and address issues in society.
Yeah.
So you still feel that we're very much far in, as Zimbabwe in terms
We still haven't even managed to make a step towards that direction. We still have a long way. And also, like, the way things have happened over the past few years is that my arrest kind of, in a way, the government made a clear statement about what will happen to any artist that does like what I've done. So in a way, everyone is afraid and everyone is doing clean art and on and all that.
But then what's the point of art then if we're not able to push a message towards, because we can't all just do clean art. Art is supposed to provoke people. Art is supposed to communicate a conversation.
Dialogue, and create dialogue. But it's unfortunate, you know, that, you know, as artists, we all have to self-censor ourselves. Unfortunately, I don't function like that.
That's why you don't have exhibitions at the National Galleries in Zimbabwe anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's very unfortunate because I've been isolated ever since up to today. And I've attempted to be part of a group exhibition, I think, 3 or 4 times. And my work has been taken down a few hours before the exhibition. Wow. So it has always been, you know, one of those hard roads. But I haven't stopped trying to be part of the exhibition. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people are just worried, even gallery owners, to come through and work with me at any level.
Because they're afraid of being in the wrong books with the government.
Yeah, but to me, I think what is unfortunate, it doesn't necessarily mean that I do cook around the exhibition every day of my life.
So I was going to ask, do you do anything else?
Yeah, I do ceramics, sculptures, I do pottery, I now do music, and I do publishing, and I write children's books and all that.
So, and they don't have...
I'm an artist. I do art. So art is what I do every day. So it's not necessarily I comment on political issues. I comment on any other social issues and all that. But the song that I played as well is one of the titles of a painting of my new exhibition, which is called Ngabantwana Bakabani. So the title of the painting is called Ngabantwana Bakabani. And it's about the shootings that happened in Harare. Yeah, most recently during the elections.
So actually, before we even get to that, I was going to touch on, so you mentioned your childhood and how the soldiers played a huge role in just, you know, creating this dark memory for you and during the whole Gukurahundi space. And then last year, we had the soldiers coming in as people that were rescuing us, and everyone was celebrating with them. And on the 1st of August, I mean, we were waiting for the elections with the violence, and the soldiers became the opposite of what we were celebrating with them last year.
Yeah.
And that's what your song touches about, the shootings that happened on the 1st of August.
My new exhibition is about that. So it's called, the title of the whole exhibition, it's an exhibition that is comprising of minimum 10 paintings and a continuous installation. So it's basically about what happened during that day. So they are quite huge paintings, and they are also in fierce red color as well. Because to me, the atrocities that were committed between 1987 and 1983... they are the same as the one that were committed most recently, because a human life has to be valued.
It has to be valued.
It's violation of human rights. It doesn't matter where it happens, anywhere in the world, I will still condemn any genocide the very same way. So to me, I felt, you know, it was very sad for such things to be happening, or these atrocities to be happening, when the president, or the so-called president, is saying it's a new dispensation. And at the same time, when we want to talk about these issues, say let bygones be bygones.
So then we can't move forward. We can't
So basically, my exhibition is about that. So the title for this particular exhibition is called Nyawo Ngibeletha. Nyawo Ngibeletha, it simply means my feet carry me. I should run. So meaning that, you know, we are still running the very same way we were running in 1983, in 2018.
That's it.
So nothing has changed. So, you know, my feet carry me.
Wow.
Mbaleka. And the painting, one of the paintings, it depicts that very sad scene where one of the soldiers was actually shooting the people, and part of that people were these old grandmothers, yes, or mamas that were carrying their vending stuff and their tomatoes and everything, trying to get out of the situation. So to me, that really touched me. So it was the first thing that I saw on television that inspired me to come up with this exhibition.
So is all your work inspired by just, you know, these bad experiences that happen in
Zimbabwe? Because I'm a very sensitive person. In a way, I'm an activist and I'm a human rights activist. So seeing human lives being lost just like that, it's really sad for me. And it comes out as paintings and as music. And this one of the paintings is called Kandakulu Mlomo Mkulu, which is also the title for one of the paintings.
The song that you just performed at the beginning.
That I performed. Yeah. So Kandakulu Mlomo Mkulu, it's this big mouth politicians with big heads that come through during election time to promise all sorts of things and promising heaven on earth.
Yes.
And then they only come for those campaign.
Then after
that, you never see them. They will come back again after 5 years. So this has been going on since 1980 up to today.
But then why are people still falling for that? I mean, are Zimbabweans not educated enough? Because we claim to be educated individuals. So where is our education coming to play now when we keep falling for the same things?
Yeah, but as educated as we are, there is this notion that as an educated people, we also want peace. We believe in dialogue all that. And in this part of the land, in Matabele land, also it's fear. That the one of the things that the government did in the 80s in those atrocities was to instill fear
in people,
and also to instill mistrust within people, meaning that we cannot gather as a people anymore and trust each other enough to be able to do demonstrations, to be able to speak out with the same voice. So in a way, it's kombanang imin a certain band. That's why the government did divide and rule. Even if you look at the situation right now in Zimbabwe, we are divided like tribal. People, you know, put people in the same space, they will talk about their tribal differences. I'm Shona, I'm Ndebele, I'm this and that, I'm Kalang, I'm this and that. So it has always been a government strategy to make sure that people are not united.
And it's sad.
Yeah,
it's
and one of the things that was clearly used was tribe.
Yeah,
tribal differences.
Because when you say that on the 1st of August, when people were shot in Harare, I actually was just picking the vibes from people on the streets. Most of the people in Bulawayo would go on to say, let them kill themselves there. It's not our problem. But then if other human beings are being violated and being killed, it's our problem as Zimbabweans. But unfortunately, the division that you're saying was instilled in us. So there's always that I'm Kalanga, I'm Ndebele, I'm Shona. So if the other group of people are being killed, it's none of my business. But then what happens then to humanity, to the essence of humanity?
This is the thing that I've always observed, and actually some people have even said to me, I mean, some people will really be rude, especially people from the other side of the country, Shona speaking, that you Ndebeles always cry about these killings, it happened a while ago, just get over it, just like
wow,
you know.
I've heard that before, even in school.
and it's very unfortunate, because in a way, people have chosen the rationale about this Gukurundi issue. It's about which tribe you come from.
Yes.
Meaning that why do people not choose the human rights option? And say we are all human beings. What happened in Matabele land was not. I think to me, I would wish to see a situation where a huge Shona speaking or Shona people coming out loud, like Ndebele people, and talk about these atrocities. Not to talk about the most recent one, because it happened where they were.
But that was even just at a small scale. Not that I'm saying those that lost their lives.
Yeah, human life is just too much.
It's too much.
But we are comparing more than 40,000 people that were killed. We should all be worried. And we should also be worried about the same thing happening again. And there is no guarantee it will happen in Matabele. It could actually happen in Mashonaland. Yeah, because they are also letting that happen. I feel that, you know, as most Shona people should actually understand that if they speak out about Kukurauni the same way we do, we could actually achieve more.
Yes, because they also comprise a huge percentage of the country.
Yeah, because this is the thing. Maybe that's the reason why Mugabe has been in power for a very long time. Because in terms of voting, we're always, you know, outnumbered.
Of course.
Because we're a minority tribe. Yeah. So Mugabe has always pushed the tribal card. I think even Mnangagwa also does the same. So he's doing the same, actually, because he comes from the very same old school.
So what would it take then for actually the most vocal Shona people to talk about these issues of killings, even issues like Gukurawundi? What would it take?
I think of late, if you look at the last elections and the 2008 elections when Tsvangirai was the leader of MDC, if you follow those trends, I think because of economic depression and people started suffering, it has kind of made most people outside Bulawayo or Matebele to realize that the ZANU-PF political party is not the best party. It should actually go and move. So that, you know, because generations have changed.
Yeah.
And there are lots of young people that were born in 1980. That might be, you know, they are 37 years old now. Same president. Can you imagine?
It's a lot.
And there hasn't been any change. There are people that are much younger now that actually, you know, because this is a global village, you compare countries and compare first world countries and all that, and you know that your country is not developing.
Yeah,
I think
to
me, suffering and hunger is kind of united us, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because united by all these sad things.
Yeah, all these sad things, because now we are able to stand up and say, because we are not standing up because of any tribal unity or anything. We are united by hunger and suffering. I'll tell you something quite interesting. You know, most Ndebele people in Matebele started moving out of the country way back.
Yes.
In the 1980s.
Yes.
So in a way, most of our relatives and friends moved to neighboring South Africa.
Yes.
Because we kind of, as Ndebele people, feel we belong there.
Yeah, exactly.
As like, you know.
But originally we come from there.
Yeah.
Ndebele people.
Yeah, as Ndebele people. So it's because of these politics and all that we now feel. Most people actually have gone to South Africa because of language and all this. So if you look at those particular migrations during that time, it was mainly Matebele people moving there.
Yes.
It's only most recently where you could actually hear someone in South Africa speaking Shona, selling goods on the road and by the robots in South Africa and all that. That's when we knew that. It was in 2008 when things were really went bad. I think also in 2007.
No, it started 2007, yes.
Yeah, 2007. So it was a rude awakening for the whole country that, oh, this is how things are happening. This is how bad Mugabe and ZANU-PF are. So in a way, it was a rude awakening for the whole country and individuals, because I have got lots of relatives in South Africa. Because I come from Matebele, and because they are relatives of mine that migrated way back. Yeah. If you go to a Methodist church, I think in Central Joburg, you find lots of Shona people
that are destitutes there. Yeah,
but it's very rare to find a Ndebele someone. It's not by accident. It's because Ndebele people have been accommodated and they've got relatives. They are able to find shelter.
Yes.
It's a very unfortunate thing.
No, it's really
so unfortunate, really. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, why should we wait until trouble knocks at our doorstep to realize that we should have done something about this to avoid all this economic collapse, all this hunger and suffering. So it's really unfortunate.
Well, so if you're listening, we're still chilling with Owen Masego, and he's just touching base on how he uses his art to address social issues and political issues in Zimbabwe. You can get a hold of us on our social media platforms at cliffcentral.com, or you can also tweet me at GilmoreTWE. Do you have a Twitter account, Owen Masego?
Yeah, I do.
What's your Twitter handle?
It's written as what I'm terrible. It's at Owen Masego.
BYO.
BYO.
You see, I know. I said Owen Masego, BYO. Also, just have a conversation with him. Ask him questions, because why I got him on the show is I feel he's one of the people that have remained consistent in terms of representing the humanity, the people of Zimbabwe, and also human rights within Zimbabwe through his art, his music. He uses that to just address or challenge people to think differently. So I'm assuming during the elections, 2018 harmonized elections, you would get a lot of people coming to you doing interviews, and you get tired of it, saying the same thing. Now it's a book to you, it's a hymn, you can sing this conversation.
Yeah. You know, like, I've become one of those very few flower artists where, you know, I'm honest about my environment. So you'll find most TV and radio stations coming through, international ones like BBC, Canadian, South
Look at
Africa.
You, you're mentioning BBC, Canada.
I mean, it's a great thing to be able to be interviewed by those big ones, because to me, it's about sending that message, that human rights message, and also holding the government accountable for the killings that they did in the 1980s and the most recent ones, or rather during the time of Mugabe and Mnangagwa. So in a way, we need to be able to reach out as many people out there in the world, because it is a global village. What happens in Zimbabwe should not happen in any other country.
No, it shouldn't.
So in a way, if we are all aware, we are sending the message right across the world, we are able to respect human life and be able to defend each other as human rights activists, as individuals, and possibly as well to send clear messages to all leaders generally in the world, not to go through or to inflict so much pain in people in general.
But through all this, when you're doing this, aren't you like afraid or scared of your life and the people around you, your wife, your children, your relatives in general? Like, aren't you like scared of their lives and for your life also?
I think I wouldn't lie and say I'm not scared. I'm a human being. So I've got feelings, I go through patches of hard times and everything. I'm affected by everything that affects everyone, especially in Zimbabwe, whether economically or everything. So I really do get worried about my safety. In fact, I've always been worried about my safety, even up to today, because, you know, when I walk every day on the street, I know I'm being followed. I was followed much more soon after my arrest in 2010. It's getting a bit better now, but also, it's this thing where, you know, when you walk into any public space, people are able to recognize who I am. Sometimes I have these very uncomfortable conversations with people that know who I am, but they never really introduce themselves. My instinct has always been, so one of the CIOs and police officers or investigators and all that. Sometimes some people come really quite aggressively on me and really, you know, say something quite weird, like, and all those kind of things. And also, like, people, they always ask me, hey, ufuni politics, ufuni politician, ufuni kwenzani. So why would you do art and talk about sensitive issues if you don't want
because
to
art
be
is supposed to talk about sensitive issues?
Like, but I always say, why do I have to be a politician to talk about political sensitive issues? I need to be an ordinary, simple Zimbabwean who is affected by.
But besides, everyone is. There's politics everywhere. There's politics in the bedroom. There's politics in the kitchen. There's politics in the community.
Especially in Zimbabwe, everything is now politics. and that having been said, also there is also, you know, because now I've got the nickname called Kukuraundi Artist, right? So that nickname also has come with great things. Like, you know, I'm now this person that a lot of people in Matabeleland are now able, especially victims, to tell me their stories. I tell you, sometimes I listen to all those stories, but sometimes they are depressing stories because people will tell you what happened to their family, to their relatives or to themselves. You know, you get stories like, you know, I've got an uncle of mine. I remember this old lady when I was sitting outside the gallery one day waiting for my wife to come through. This old lady came through. I was really surprised that at her age she could actually see who I was.
Wow.
It was really one of those amazing moments for me when she started relating to me a story of her husband whose limbs were actually chopped off. I listened to that story, like, I couldn't, you know, I was really, like, shocked.
Mm, mm.
Like, talking to someone who survived, and that person is talking about the husband.
Wow.
So, in a way, people have been able to let out.
Yeah. So, you have become the go-to person.
Yeah, I'm now the go-to person where people feel they can easily talk to me.
Mm.
And also, I think even the journalists as well, when they talk to about Gukuraund, they always talk about Owen Masego. So in a way, I'm always the starting point.
That's amazing.
Of writing Gukuraund stories and relating to these.
Mm. Mm.
You know, because apparently there were no stories, like strong stories, or nothing was written much on media. Journalists were afraid up until my exhibition, up until my arrest.
Yeah.
But in a way, that also is great. It's a great feeling for me. Maybe that's what has been keeping me in Zimbabwe and walking and keeping my head high.
Mm.
And, you know, knowing that at least, you know, sometimes, you know, people always think I have made quite a lot of money. To be honest, I haven't. I've only been arrested.
I was also going to ask maybe for some money, and then maybe you could buy me a car or a house.
Yeah, yeah, but also, like, you know, you know, I live off art, right? I would say, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a poor person. I wouldn't say I'm a rich person, but I'm one of the few Zimbabweans as well who is surviving like everyone else.
Mm.
Things are really hard. You know, I've got my best days and my worst days.
Yeah,
so, well, maybe I might get very rich one day and sign autographs. I'm famous.
But, you know, for me, I actually don't. I think you've achieved quite a lot in terms of being the voice for many people. Now, if someone is able, an old woman is able to come to you and talk to you about what they went through and what happened to them, it's a lot. I think that's an inspirational story in itself.
Yeah, and also
you have achieved quite a lot by just being that person. That
and also to. Also, what is very interesting as well is that Gukuraund has been one of these very taboo topic or conversations to talk about. So in a way, I also get young people trying to understand.
Exactly.
Like you start to relate, and I start telling them how I grew up, why I did this in a way. So I'm in a way enlightening the young generation as well about what happened. And one good thing that about young people as well is that I get approached by young people from different tribes.
Yeah.
I think to me, I was very excited looking and getting a Shona young person coming to me, asking me about Gukuraund.
Mm.
Because they were so young, they were never there. They didn't see anything. They didn't hear anything.
Mm.
Same applies with some of the very young Ndebele people as well that were not there. Yes. These stories come up now.
Mm.
So in a way, that generation is able at least to be, you know, to be reasonable and to try to learn and understand
what's going on,
as opposed to maybe my father's generation and our generation.
They don't understand, they just want issues to be solved.
Yeah, yeah, you know. So in a way, that's also an achievement. But also what's very unfortunate is my isolation from the artist community.
Yeah, yeah. That was actually like a question I was going to ask, like, so how then does it make, because obviously when you have this whole attention, which doesn't come across as a positive attention, according to our people, automatically everyone isolates you. It's just like when someone, you know, HIV AIDS, automatically it's like we don't associate with you. So it's almost like you now, everybody associates you with Gukuraund, you arrested, is this guy that everyone is looking at.
Yeah.
What does it do to your livelihood if you are so much isolated?
And you know, that's where family comes through, where I get a lot of support from my wife and my family, my kids. And, you know, and also, you know, I spend quite a lot of time now at home. I work at home. My studio is at home. I do everything at home. So I kind of, you know, have more time to be able to do my art.
Yes.
And work. And yeah. So, you know, I don't have many friends anymore like I used to.
Because everyone is just backed off.
Yeah, yeah. So that's in a way as well, even if people are coming back to me now, I appreciate, but you know, I don't trust people anymore. Like, maybe I'm just generally paranoid, but
but
it's difficult to trust people, you know. Like, when I got arrested, everyone disappeared, and now they're suddenly coming through.
Where were you when I was arrested?
Where were you? Things were really good. But I could also kind of understand the issue that I was dealing with, or that I'm still dealing with, which is Gukuraund. It's quite scary and it's quite worrying. Mm. I remember when I was arrested, my father was really like terrified.
Yeah.
And he was really worried, but he was happy at the same time that, you know, bahlanya abantu laba abatshele.
Yeah.
Yeah, izinja zabantu bazasitshela all that. Sorry about that language. But, you know, so my father, in a way, is this, you know, he's so bitter about Kukurawen. And also with my father, I actually saw him being beaten.
Ish.
I actually saw him with my mom and him bleeding and my mom bleeding and all that. So I actually saw that in Ntumbane. So in a way, my father experienced it much more than me. For me, it was really seeing things happen.
But then you're a child and you're seeing these things. Those memories stick.
Yeah, and also what is said, you know, like when you really, you know, we all heavily rely on our parents naturally. And seeing the person or people, especially my mother, the person that I was close to much more. You know, African culture, we all mtaka mama.
Yes.
So seeing your mom being beaten up, being tortured, the person that you rely on, the person that is everything to you, you are hopeless and you have no protection. If anything could easily have happened to us there,
then you know there's nothing.
Because we were exposed. Yeah. So I think everyone else experienced the same thing. Lives were lost, relatives, women were raped, and all that. So it was really one of those sad moments. And it's not easy to say, let bygones be bygones.
No, you can't. Like, get over it. Like, and, that whole statement, get over it.
Yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, you find that even curators and gallery owners, they are now self-censoring themselves and censoring artists that are bringing work. I had an unfortunate, encounter when I tried to put my new exhibition at the gallery for indoors. Because for me, I thought, well, you know, Zenzele is being allowed to do his documentary, and there is some plays that were political. There is also Blood Tongue, which was produced by Nime Trust, and that's through Josh Nyapimbi. I thought, well, it's the new dispensation.
So no, but you are on my server.
I might as well, you know, because at the National Gallery in Bulawayo, there was also Intwasa exhibition.
Yes.
So here I am and trying to be part of the exhibition. I tell you the negativity that I got from the curator.
So you never got to be part of it?
I never got to be part of it. I had a fierce fight of words, an exchange of, you know, unfortunately said words from curators. And, you know, I didn't want to be emotional about it, but unfortunately I couldn't help it. But what was said is that, our curator as a young person was supposed to be this person who had to be open-minded in the new dispensation. And also develop his curatorship career.
Yes.
Because my presence, in a way, was going to be one of those, like, it was going to give power to the exhibition. I'm not saying that I'm a great artist, but I'm saying the history that I have.
But at the end of it all, and like I mentioned earlier on, when you mention of people that challenge the governments and politics, your name, Owen Maseko, pops up, Thomas Mafumo pops up, and a few other names, so you've become that person.
I accept that, but I always say to people, even to you now, and people who are listening, you know, like, I don't do art to get attention or to...
I think you like attention, Owen Maseko.
No, I don't.
You look like one of those, you like attention. I think you always wanted attention even if you were a kid.
So, you know, like, you know, art, being an artist or doing visual arts, it's a very lonely job or profession, because you are always alone in your studio, in your own thoughts. It's up until you put those thoughts and ideas into canvas, and then you put it in an exhibition space, and you have an audience, and people start to talk about your art, then when you realize the power of what you have been doing in your studio. So in a way, you will never know or predict what's going to happen
and how people are going to take
with
it,
your art, or how people, sometimes, you know, you get negativity or something. And also, like, you know, as an artist, I think most artists also experience that. I've got lots of work that I've done that I have not managed to exhibit, not because it's bad art or anything. I just didn't get that feeling that let me not show this one. Let me just roll this.
Isn't like an artist thing though? Like, even if you're a musician, there's always stuff that you record and you film. I don't want to.
And all that. And what is interesting, sometimes I get people that come through to my studio at home, and start chatting to me like what you're doing,
you know, like what you're doing.
We are in your studio anyway, you know, not mine. But you know, they
we're actually at Owen's studio right now, and we, like you know, the Gimoti vibe. We go to the spaces, we talk to people in their own space, and we're in his studio now. So which is there's no electricity, by the way. But anyway,
yeah, there is. So now, you know, individuals will come through, get interested in my art, and sometimes they ask me quite a lot of stuff, and I end up showing them some of my rolled paintings, some sculptures, dusty sculptures in a corner.
Yeah.
And someone surprises me, said, "Do you mind if I buy this one off you?"
Really?
And you just, like, you caught me off guard, you know, I never thought anyone would want to buy it.
But the thing is, like, you know what, the beautiful thing when you do art or whatever form of art, it communicates differently to the next person.
Yeah, yeah.
So to you, true, it might not be something that you wanted, but when I see it, I'm like, I see something. It communicates something.
Yeah,
to me.
It does.
And that's
the
beauty of art in general.
Yeah, and this is the most amazing thing. Sometimes with you know, people that come through, they give you that fulfillment where you say to yourself, "Well, I thought my time was wasted on thoughts and trying to articulate a particular something."
Yeah.
And then here is someone, you know, some people will just buy one of those cups where I just dumped. And it's like, "Oh, why did I paint this cup this way? Why did I do this sculpture? Did I just push it on the side and forget about it?"
Yeah.
And then there are some works that I really believe in them and think, but this is it. Exhibited them, but I've kept them for a very long time.
So that's the whole point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, with all this that has happened, you're not able to showcase at many galleries within Zimbabwe.
No, I haven't.
Where do you do your exhibitions? How do you sell your paintings?
The good thing which has happened as well, you know, there's always a good side or there's always light on the other side.
Yeah, of course.
I've managed to exhibit my band exhibition outside the country.
Nice.
I think over the years, you know, I've managed to travel, and I think one of the most challenging things that I've done so far is speaking about my art.
But you're doing a good job now. Listen to you. You have been talking for more than 30 minutes.
Yeah, maybe I'm comfortable because in the studio, you know, it's only the two of us and a few people. But yeah.
So I've been talking to you for almost like over 50 minutes, and we need to sort of like wrap up. Tell me a little bit, what inspired you to going into publishing and to writing books?
I've always loved cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
So my writing of children's books came from, I do animation, a little bit of animation.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed, you know, most animations and cartoons are mainly for children.
Yes.
So I kind of, instead of adopting other people's, other authors and writers' scripts to do my animation, I instead chose to write.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So what's the future for myself?
People in rural areas where I come from, my rural home, there is nothing much for young people to do, or rather, there is nothing.
So
in a way, I want to create an arts community or an art school that will absorb all these young people.
Yeah, yeah.
But it will take a while because economy is very tight.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, maybe I might be lucky. We might be lucky, my wife and I, to get funding.
Yeah.
But we are not the kind of people that just sit down and wait.
Yeah. So what? Do something.
Yeah. So what we've already done is that we managed to raise some money.
Yeah. Right, ladies and gentlemen, Owen Masego, thank you so much for making time. I mean, we've been talking for an hour, and it's been amazing.
Yeah, time flies. Eh?
Time flies, but it's been amazing talking to you for an hour. I hope I'm going to have more time with you. We're going to come and have another conversation. Maybe Owen Masego 2.1. Or 1. What? 1.1.
Yeah, we'll keep doing countings until we have 50.
Definitely, because there's more conversation to have besides all this. You have other things that you're going to be working on, and it'd be nice to have that conversation with you.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah,
thank you so much.
Yeah, you're most welcome.
All right, so thank you so much for joining us here on the Gilmore T Vibe, and remember, every Friday at 1 p.m we are live on Cliff Central. You can download the application on iOS, on Android it's Cliff Central, and also you can live stream on www.cliffcentral.com. up next is O'Neill Africa, and until next week, same time, same place, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
This is CliffCentral.com.